from deep inside your radio.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, it's time once again to consider an irony or two. It's what we do here, among other things. There's been, of course, this week as a new Osama bin Laden tape, another tape from another one of those guys gets played. There's this chorus, you know, from What Direction It Comes, saying, well, what kind of broadcasters, what kind of networks would possibly give airtime to these tapes from these sorts of people? Last year, Radio Liberty, an organization funded by the United States taxpayers, had a journalist named Andrei Babitsky. He interviewed Shamil Basayev, the Chechen warlord who asserts responsibility for the hostage-taking at a school in Beslan. You remember this last year? It ended with the death of 331 people, most of them school children. The Russians had to come in and end it in a not quite successful manner. Radio Liberty opted not to run the material, but it was later broadcast on ABC's Nightline. So that's the kind of network we put those people on the air. Radio Liberty and ABC. But Radio Liberty wouldn't put them on the air. They just interview them. And there's also been a lot of talk this week in the newspapers and on CNN about the pace of the recovery in New Orleans. Not record-breaking in that particular way. And averring that part of the problem, if not the problem, is that there's no plan. The city has no plan. Well, far be it from me to gild the lily of the mayor, who is apparently on a nationwide speaking tour. He hasn't been seen in New Orleans in weeks, but he was in San Diego this week. It's important. So he's now being referred to in New Orleans as Mayor Nagon. But as I say, far be it from me, but never reported in those stories is an interesting fact. The federal funds to help homeowners whose homes were flooded, to help them rebuild, recover, or sell out, those funds amounting to the billions, B as in Boston, will not be arriving in New Orleans until September at the earliest. More than a year after the disaster. Now, me, just personally me, I'd rather have the billions and no plan than the plan and no billions. Hello, welcome to the show. When I call you up, your line's engaged. I'm enough, so act your age. We have lost the time that was so hard to find, and I will lose
not the guy who cared about love, and I'm not the guy who cared about fortunes and such. I never cared much. Oh, look at me now. I never knew the technique of kissing. I never knew the thrill I could get from your touch. Never knew much. Oh, look at me now. I'm a new man, better than Casanova at his best, with a new heart, brand new start. I'm so proud I'm busting my vest. So I'm the guy who turned out a lover. So I'm the guy who laughed at those blue diamond rings. One of those things. Oh, look at me now. I'm not the guy who cared about love, and I'm not the guy who cared about fortunes and such. Never cared much. Oh, look at me now. And I never knew the technique of kissing. I never knew the thrill I could get from your touch. I never knew much. Oh, look at me now. I'm a new man, much better than Casanova at his very best, with a new heart and a brand new start. When I'm so proud I'm busting my vest. So I'm the guy who turned out a lover. Yes, I'm the guy who laughed at those blue diamond rings. One of those things. Oh, look at me now. Look at me now.
My friend Harry's been shot.
No, I'm okay, Dick. Thank you. Thank you so much for your concern and your consideration. Ladies and gentlemen, you won't see me. I'll be gone, for 6 weeks from this continent, but I'll be here on the radio. Hello from the edge of America, from the home of the homeless. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this week's edition of the show, the last one to be originating from this continent for a while. I have to go outside the bubble. Just has to be. If you're going to be in Edinburgh, Scotland, in the month of August, come see us. Judith Owen and I are doing a show called American Voyeurs at the Edinburgh Festival. So that's where we'll be. You can come see us. It's not that much money once you've made the trip to Scotland. Ladies and gentlemen, the man who led America's hunt for Osama bin Laden is ticked off that the CIA is disbanding the only unit devoted entirely to the pursuit of Osama bin Laden. Shutting down the bin Laden unit squandered 10 years of expertise in the war on terror, according to Michael Scheuer, who founded the unit in 1995 and arguably knows more about bin Laden than any other Western intelligence official. He believes the unit was dismantled because of bureaucratic jealousies within the CIA. And the closure delivers a further setback to a pursuit that has been squeezed for resources for the past 2 years. What it robs you of is a critical mass of officers who've been working on this together for a decade, he told the British newspaper The Guardian. We had a breed of specialists, rare in an intelligence community that prides itself on generalists. Scheuer became aware of bin Laden in the 1980s when bin Laden was on the fringes of the U.S.-backed. That's right, we were backing bin Laden. In that wild Mujahideen movement fighting the Soviets in Afghanistan. Yeah, Afghanistan, way back then. In that wild, in 1995, when Western intelligence agencies knew little about bin Laden, Scheuer was charged with setting up a unit that would track what support he was giving to Islamist groups. CIA officials disclosed this week that the ALEC unit, it was named for Scheuer's son, had been disbanded and its agents reassigned. The agency described the shakeup as a necessary adaptation to the changing nature of the war on terror. You think Scheuer is ticked off because they closed down a unit that was named after his son? Bureaucratic jealousy? Somebody else had a son that wanted a unit? Scheuer just said he disagreed with the argument the CIA was making that bin Laden was isolated, the organization was broken, that he is now just a symbol. He asks, quote, how do you explain the fact that he's able to dominate international media whenever he wants to, unquote? I think to answer that question, the CIA ought to open up a unit to investigate international media. Call it the Alex Friend Unit. Ladies and gentlemen, did you know that you're eating fish ice cream? Did you? I mean, whatever kind of ice cream you're eating. It could well be, well, not fish ice cream, genetically modified fish ice cream. New designer ice cream made possible by genetic modification threatens to set off a time bomb in the health of British children, according to scientists talking to a British newspaper, The Independent. The scientists from Britain and Canada. I got an angry email this week from somebody who apparently took it personally when I said, is Canada a separate country now, last week? Canadians, you're supposed to chill. That's your national culture. The scientists from Britain and Canada have alerted an official committee in Britain, which this month will rule on the safety of the new ice cream, which is already being sold increasingly worldwide, i.e. here, by Unilever. It contains an artificial protein copied through a genetic modification process from a fish living in the bottom of the Northwest Atlantic. An antifreeze protein, yeah, antifreeze from fish, what could be wrong with that, allows the fish, the ocean pout, to survive extreme cold. Unilever, the world's biggest ice cream maker, says using its artificial equivalent allows it to produce products with more intense flavor delivery, a wider range of novel textures, and more intricate shapes. I didn't know ice cream had shapes. Unilever also says it can improve the healthiness of the ice cream by cutting its fat and sugar content. Yeah. The scientists retort that it risks setting off an immunological time bomb. The company now owns Ben & Jerry's, has sold ice cream with the protein in the United States for 3 years, and will also do so in such advanced countries as Indonesia, Mexico, and the Philippines. Hey, that's a good club to be in, food-wise. It also has the go-ahead in Australia and New Zealand. Despite objections by the health departments of the state of Victoria, Queensland, and New South Wales, and the New Zealand Food Safety Authority. The key step in making the ice cream is getting a hold of the ocean pout's ice structuring protein. It lowers the temperature at which ice crystals grow and changes their shape and structure so they do less damage to living tissues. The Unilever could go out and catch the fish, an eel-like species that lives on the ocean floor, extract the protein and add it to the ice cream, like another ingredient, but this would be expensive. And the company points out it would cut the population of the fish, whose stocks are already declining. Well, sell. Oh, I see what you mean. So it is resorted to a genetic modification process already widely used to produce vitamins and enzymes, including vegetarian cheese. Just one more reason to be a vegetarian, knowing that. I mean, that fact. A synthetic embryo. This is about a genetically modified product as you can get, says one of the professors in the study. The more important debate is whether the end result is safe, particularly for children. The main danger, says Unilever, is that people may prove allergic to the protein. The artificial version, says Unilever, is identical to the natural form that people have eaten in ocean pout for decades. Yeah. Twice a week for me, some pout. Scientists insist the protein is changed in the processing and may pose a danger. This is a novel protein, says one of the scientists, manufactured by genetically modified organisms, and its characteristics have never been fully evaluated. He and his colleagues dispute the adequacy of Unilever's safety checks because it checked the protein against the blood of people allergic to cod, not to pout. It's just fun to say pout, isn't it? Ocean pout. It's all fun. Just relax have some genetically modified fish ice cream. And now, ladies and gentlemen, time to listen to the worm. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast, won't you?
Soft, listen to the worm. We can listen to the worm.
The escalating level of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere is making the world's oceans more acidic. Government and independent scientists warn that by the end of the century, the trend could decimate coral reefs and creatures that underpin the sea's food web. Maybe even the pout. Scientists and some politicians have just begun to focus on the question of ocean acidification. They describe it as one of the most pressing environmental threats facing Earth. It's just been an absolute time bomb, there's that phrase again, that's gone off both in the scientific community and ultimately in our public policymaking, says Representative Jay Inslee of Washington, who received a two-hour briefing on the subject in May with five other House members. It's another example, he says, of when you put gigatons of carbon dioxide into the atmosphere, you have these results none of us would have predicted. None of us, congressmen? No, he doesn't mean that, I don't think. Tom Lovejoy, president of the H. John Heinz III Center for Science, Economics, and the Environment, has rewritten his book, Climate Change and Biodiversity, to highlight the threat of ocean acidification. Quote, it's the single most profound environmental change I've learned about in my entire career. For decades, scientists viewed the ocean's absorption of carbon dioxide as an environmental plus because it mitigates the effects of global warming. But by taking up one-third of the atmosphere's carbon dioxide, oceans are transforming their pH level. That's a calculation of the balance of a liquid's acidity and its alkalinity. Scientists say ocean pH levels will drop by another 0.3, well, whatever the units are, by 2100, which could seriously damage marine creatures that need calcium carbonate to build their shells and skeletons. Once absorbed in seawater, carbon dioxide forms carbonic acids, lowers ocean pH, making it harder for corals, plankton, and tiny marine snails to form their body parts. I know, you're saying, who needs body parts? That's easy for you to say. You're a person. Once considered a seditious myth by much of the world's business and industrial community, climate change is, according to many scientists, already making itself felt in the increased frequency of extreme weather events. Insurers and other industry groupings are now alerting themselves to the potential economic costs of warming, according to UPI. At a climate change debate hosted by Lloyd's of London this past week, business leaders warned that natural disasters linked to climate change could have severe financial consequences for industry. Now you're talking serious. Planet schmanet, industry. Quote, it is an indisputable fact that weather-related catastrophes are costing the insurance industry more than ever before, said the chairman of Lloyd's. Last year was the worst on record. From insurance standpoint, more than 90% of the sum resulted from natural catastrophes. This was a sevenfold increase in insured losses resulting from natural catastrophes in a decade. It's likely, he added, that the economic costs of global warming would at least double to $150 billion annually over the coming 10 years. That's an Iraq war, a year of the Iraq war every year. We can afford that. Obviously. We don't know what will happen, said the head of Lloyd's of London, but uncertainty means greater risk, and we do need to know more now to manage it. Yeah. Planet schmanet. Industry. Schmindustry. Ladies and gentlemen. The new Iraq comes to the fore. Brutality and corruption are rampant in Iraq's police force, according to the Los Angeles Dog Trainer, with abuses of, including the rape of female prisoners, the release of terrorism suspects in exchange for bribes, assassinations of police officers, and participation in insurgent bombings. What more do you want them to do? A recent assessment by State Department police training contractors echoes these investigative documents, confidential Iraqi government documents, concluding that strong paramilitary and insurgent influences within the police force and endemic corruption have undermined public confidence in the new Iraqi government. Officers have also beaten prisoners to death, been involved in kidnapping rings, sold thousands of stolen and forged Iraqi passports, and passed along vital information to insurgents. They've been busy. The alleged offenses span dozens of police units and hundreds of officers, including beat cops, generals, and police chiefs. The vast majority of cases are either under investigation or were dropped because of lack of evidence or lack of witness testimony. After a discovery last November of a secret Interior Ministry detention facility in Baghdad, U.S. officials declared this year the year of the police. They vowed a renewed effort to expand and professionalize Iraq's police. The year of the police, ladies and gentlemen. Elements of the Ministry of Interior have been co-opted by insurgents, terrorists, and sectarian militias. Payroll fraud, other kinds of corruption and intimidation campaigns by insurgent and militia organizations undermine police effectiveness in key cities throughout Iraq. The document basically shows, this is an Iraqi document, basically shows that Interior Ministry management has failed, said a U.S. official. The document didn't directly address U.S. policy failures, but I guess it does show that too, unquote. There are numerous credible reports of ministry and police officials requiring payment from would-be recruits to join the police. Police officers have also organized kidnapping rings that abduct civilians for ransom. In some of the cases, the victims are police officers. The new Iraq, ladies and gentlemen, a product of your taxpayer money. You know those people, those protesters that you see every once in a while from the Falun Gong? I remember them at the Democratic Convention in Boston. They were the largest group of demonstrators there. They were demonstrating out at the beach, I think, last week here in Southern California. And their banner always reads, or one of their banners always reads, Falun Gong is good. Which is, a fine slogan. I'm sure it's been focus grouped. It's a religious sect from China that has been complaining for years of persecution by the Chinese. But man, those T-shirts are cheap. But now a respected Canadian human rights lawyer and a former Canadian cabinet member have lent their weight to charges that Canada has been killing Falun Gong dissidents so it can use their organs. Lawyer David Mattis and David Kilgore, former Secretary of State for Asia and the Pacific, spent 2 months investigating the accusations. China denies them. It is simply inescapable that this is going on, Kilgore told reporters as he and Mr. Mattis released their findings this week. They provided transcripts of phone calls placed in Chinese to detention centers and organ transplant clinics in which officials said organs from Falun Gong practitioners could be made available for speedy use. Some of the calls were placed on behalf of the Falun Gong by people asking if they could get organ transplants. The two who made this public said they had carefully examined phone records and had sat with certified Mandarin translators as they listened to the phone conversations. They also conducted interviews of their own and investigated government records and other evidence. Quote, believe me, I used to be a prosecutor. I knew there would be cynicism, and I did my utmost to make sure that everything was satisfactorily and properly and ethically done, Kilgore said. Here's one conversation to a Mr. Lee in Mishan City. Do you have Falun Gong organ suppliers? We used to have, yes. What about now? Yes. Can we come to select, or do you provide directly to us? We provide them to you. Lee also said he had quite a few Falun Gong males under 40 from whom organs could be taken. But those T-shirts are cheap, ladies and gentlemen. As if there were not enough, and it never is, may I propose to you another copyrighted feature of this broadcast? No, not that one. News from outside the bubble. Des Brown. I'm gonna look for that music because this seems so... It seems so lonely in here without my band. Oh, here it is now. News from outside the bubble. That interregnum never happened, did it? See what I mean? Energy. Des Brown, Britain's defense secretary, conceded this week that the deployment of 3,300 British forces into the Taliban heartland of southern Afghanistan has energized the Taliban. His somber assessment came after a week in which a sixth British soldier was killed in the province, and as he prepares to announce the dispatch of reinforcements. Lieutenant Colonel Stuart Tootle, the officer in charge of British troops in the region, also admitted the resistance was proving unexpectedly tough. He said, quote, "If we were honest, we didn't expect it to be quite so intense. But at the same time, we've trained for it." In an interview with the British newspaper The Guardian, Defense Secretary Brown said, "It is certainly the case that the very act of deployment into the South has energized opposition. And the scale of that opposition and the nature of that opposition became apparent when we were deploying." But he insisted that the attacks on British troops were foreseen. And from Australia, no bad deed goes punished. It is highly unlikely that anyone in the Australian military will be disciplined for the bungled repatriation of the body of Army Private Jake Kavko from Iraq, who was killed over there. The chief of the Australian Defence Force, Air Chief Marshal Angus Houston, guarantees that improvements to repatriation procedures would ensure that such mix-ups in which Private Kavko's body was confused with that of a Bosnian would never happen again. A military report on the incident released this week said Private Kavko's body was wrongly identified because the wrong body was shown to his platoon sergeant. Yeah, that's him. Distressed and fatigued, the sergeant identified the body as Private Kavko's, despite a name tag bearing the Bosnian's details that was attached to the body's hand. The report also said that efforts to bring Private Kavko's body back to Australia were rushed, and the use of a civilian mortuary in Iraq contributed to the identification error. A sanitized copy of the report was given to the private's family this week. Said Air Marshal Houston, "What happened to Private Kavko was unacceptable, and anyone who is willing to risk their life for their nation deserves better treatment." Where possible, the bodies of military personnel will be carried on military aircraft, and the force will try to not use civilian mortuaries. The private died from a gunshot wound fired from his own pistol on April 21st at his barracks. Still no explanation of all that. Nobody is going to be punished. Because it won't happen again. You know, this is Le Show, and maybe it is time for me to read the trades for you. I heard this music, and I just dug up a trade. What can I do? This is from Media Daily News. About you and your digital video recorder, if you've got one yet. You'll have one soon. Take it from me. But take this from Media Daily News. I'll read it for you. Won't I? Sure, I will. ABC, that's the American Broadcasting Companies, has held discussions. That's what they call themselves. That's not me putting this stupid plural there. ABC has held discussions on the use of technology that would disable the fast-forward button on digital video recorders. According to ABC President of Advertising Sales, Mike Shaw, with the primary goal to allow TV commercials to run as intended. I would love it if the MSOs, which I believe are cable systems, during the deployment of the new DVRs, digital video recorders they're putting out there, would disable the fast-forward button, Shaw said. While they risk losing some of their DVR customers if fast-forwarding were blocked, Shaw said the cable operators are in the same business we're in. They gotta sell ads too, he said. So if everybody's skipping everybody's ads, that's not a long-term business model for them either. Shaw also threw cold water on the idea that neutering the fast-forward option would result in a consumer backlash. He suggested that consumers prefer DVRs for their ability to facilitate on-demand viewing and not ad zapping. And consumers might warm to the idea that viewing anytime brings with it a trade-off in the form of unavoidable commercial viewing. Yeah, we're that dumb. Quote, I'm not so sure that the whole issue really is one of commercial avoidance, Shaw said. It really is a matter of convenience, so you don't miss your favorite show. And quite frankly, we're just training a new generation of viewers to skip commercials because they can. Has he ever heard of the video cassette machine? Man. But back to reading. I'm not sure that the driving reason to get a DVR in the first place is just to skip commercials. I don't fundamentally believe that. People can understand, in order to have convenience and on-demand options, that you can't skip commercials. Unquote. This is not the same guy who said that not watching the commercials on television shows was stealing. But I'm sure they're friends. You know, if only newspapers could make you read the ads, they'd be a growth business again. But back to the trades. Shaw said it's crucial for ABC and networks to hold these discussions with cable operators while digital video recorder penetration, pardon me, is still in its early stages. There are around 10% of U.S. TV households. It's in our interest and the MSO's interest to figure out something that works for the two of us, he said. He's described as the frequently outspoken Shaw. And I don't think anybody's going to outspeak him this time. Skip commercials while you can, ladies and gentlemen. A prescient warning that occurs when I read the trades for you. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast. All right, now you know that... Or do you? That this week, President Bush celebrated his 60th birthday. There was a round of coverage of that. He had a press conference where he found everybody in the audience who had a birthday to get up on stage with him. But he was the only one, I think, that was 60. And he's had some joking remarks about how it feels to be 60. Also, in the last little while, the last week and a half, the president has lost his number one speechwriter, his primary speechwriter, Michael Gerson, who was also elevated to the post of a presidential advisor in the second term. a man who's, according to the coverage this weekend, responsible for the phrase Axis of Evil, and certainly contributed to the writing of many of President Bush's best-known speeches, has left, supposedly has a book deal. Who doesn't? Who doesn't have a book deal? I mean, really? Do you? Do you not have a book deal yet, dear listener? Tomorrow's Monday. Anyway, so Gerson has left the administration, the latest in, you know, it's the second term. A lot of them are leaving. And, of course, there's also this spate of problems with the military and their behavior over there, the Haditha situation, and also this weekend, the charging of four military men with involvement in the rape and killing incident in Iraq. It all sounds like there may be a phone call in the offing.
Golden Age Eagle. Hey, 43. Happy birthday. Again. 41. I understand why you couldn't call me on the day.
Yeah, busy speed fishing.
Well, I figured it was... Sorry, did these old ears deceiviate me? Did you? Speed fishing?
Try to catch as many bonefish as you can in a series of 3-minute speed laps around the bay. Tremendous fun. Takes total concentration. No time for
sons hitting their 60th birthday. No, I understood. But hey, look, you know, if I were in your shoes, retired, relaxed, watching all the missteps of your administration being turned into lemons, you know, I'd be focused on speed fishing, too. Great that you're still having new adventures. Laura and I are both very happy for you.
You know, Sprout, maybe it's just Connecticut versus Texas, but some of us favor our sarcasm applied with a brush instead of a trowel. Anyway, didn't want to make more of a deal out of it than it already was. Turning 60 is bad enough without doing it in front of the White House press corps.
Yeah, one reason we went to Chicago, part of our new initiative to speak to the country in the country instead of over the country.
Mm-hmm. Thing we all do every election year, that new initiative.
Brush or towel?
You got our gift?
Yeah, very funny. Laura said when the Secret Service guys opened the carton and found a year's supply of adult diapers, a couple of the agents just totally cracked up. Just, you know, just lost it. Doubled over, earpieces dangling loose, the whole deal.
Yeah. Interesting little birthday gift the North Koreans sent you, even though it got soaked in the journey.
Yeah, Mr. Kim Jong-il is one bad customer. He is one strange hombre. He is, well, now that Saddam is in jail of the axes of evil, Mr. Kim Jong-il has got to be the worst axe.
Brent was saying to Barr and me that we, now we know that Taipo Dung, their name for the long-range missile, means paper tiger in Korean. And it was funny at the time over dinner, but... Not carton of adult diapers, funny, but...
See, 41, this is just another example of why we don't let folks like your buddy Brent into our administration. I mean, sure, the North Koreans sent 7 missiles into the Pacific. Mm-hmm. By the way, you don't hear the whale huggers complaining about that, you know? Easier to sue our Navy than...
You were talking about Brent...
Yeah. He and his ilkers think that North Korea is less of a threat just because...
Just because they just shot half their missile fleet into the West Pacific? Not the most irrational of analyses.
I say, Mr. Kim Jong-il is not a rational type analysis. He's a classic megamaniac. He sees himself next to divine and his purposes as ordained by heaven. See, you understand somebody like that, you have to think like he does. And we do.
He said boo, and he made you blink.
See, 41, you folks thought you were good chess players, but you were playing in two dimensions. With Korea and Iran and Iraq and Afghanistan, we're playing in four dimensionalities.
Problem is, you may be playing four-dimensional checkers.
Hey, sir. You know, that's hard work, too. Tell you one thing, at my age, everything's hard work. course, that was true last year, too, but
tell you something. You're in too good condition for the at-my-age jokes to work, 43. Long time yet before you're the first ex-president to do a Viagra commercial.
No kidding. But see, we understand that this fella is a threat to his neighborhood, but that doesn't mean that we don't not have an interest in dealing with that threat. I mean, Saddam was a threat to his neighborhood, not ours. But
true, but the neighborhood he was a threat to covered about 200 square miles. Now, not criticizing your war, son. Never wanted to do that. No point starting now. Yeah. Just saying this guy's doing... Remember when you were 4 years old and we took Jeb and you to the circus and you pooped in your pants because you were tired and you wanted to go home? I never did that. That's what this fella in North Korea is doing. The worst thing a parent can do is turn that kind of behavior into a crisis. No, worst thing a parent can do is make you leave on your pants as a punishment. We never did that. Besides, sir, in the four-dimensional matrix in which we're operating, focusing on the North Korea threat has the advantage of getting Iraq off the front page, as does my trip to Chicago. So would you cloning a sheep, but
not going to happen under my watch.
Not a really good time frame for all those aberrations involving the military and killings to start trickling out, was it?
Well, this is the real problem we're having with the new Iraqi government of Mr. Maliki.
Mm-hmm.
He can't control the leakers in his administration. In other words, 4-1, this sort of aberrationism's coming out now. It just doesn't help anybody. I mean, it's almost as if Mr. Maliki wanted us to leave before the job's done.
Yeah, didn't his plan have a timetable for withdrawal in it?
Oh, yeah, he had some sort of half-assified cut-and-run thing in there, you know, just as a slop to his hardliners.
Mm-hmm.
But we know that's just for domestic consumerism. Tell you what's really hurting, though, 4-1.
Not peeing.
No, sir, thank you for inquiring.
Mm.
No, it's the loss of Mike Gerson.
Yeah, you had yourself a mighty good wordsmith there, 43, no doubt about it.
Yes, sir. Like the saying goes, he could put lipstick on a pig and you'd never notice it. Very good man. Came up with the phrase, access of evil.
Thought David Frum got credit for that.
Yes, sir. Well, see, you want to know what the deal is with that? He got credit for it when he left the administration. Now that Gerson's leaving, he's getting credit. We just think it's a big enough concept that more than one person can enjoy the haloitic effect of it. Heck, I mean, I came up with the middle word.
Of?
Yeah, Gerson had access for evil. Said it sounded more active, more evil. You know, he had a great feel for the existence of evil, more than a speechwriter, of course, an actual advisor in an administration where, for a change, there aren't a lot of those.
Access for evil.
No,
I think you were right.
Hey, I know a fella's 60th birthday, hearing his dad say that at least once in a six-minute conversation just might be the best gift of all.
Well,
not really. The diapers were better. Hey, 41, I know you got fish to speed around on top of. Thanks for the call.
Bar sends her best.
Please thank her for doing that. Take care of 41.
You too, old timer.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Well, not that many. Not a sorry old world this week. A few good ones. Calvin Johnson, police chief of Dumfries, Virginia, wrote an apology to Butch Shipe and two other homeless men whose sparse belongings were tossed out last month with a camp they had erected illegally in the woods. The letter more or less explained to the young men that we as a community are trying to make them whole, Johnson said, adding that the department is trying to replace the personal documents that were discarded. It's not our intent, he said, to go out there and make it harder for them. Dumfries town manager Dave Whitlow ordered Johnson to write the letter of apology. Whitlow was on vacation when the men were evicted from the wooded area, where a couple of them had lived for more than a year. This was not the way the town wanted to be known, not the way it wanted to act, Whitlow said. He spent part of this week editing the chief's apology. About 15 people phoned the chief's office, offering to provide clothes, a tent, and shaving kits. If anything good came out of this, it's that the community is joining in and trying to help. He said, even though he was responding to the property owner who wanted the homeless men off his property, he said maybe the police should not have thrown away the tents, cots, and clothes that were strewn throughout the camp. Hidden among them were pictures and documents that connected the men to their pasts. And from Australia, shame, they have Big Brother down there too, and they apparently care about it. Shamed Big Brother Australia contestant Michael Ashley Cox has apologized to Australia for causing any offense, but he maintains he did not do anything wrong when he rubbed his groin in the face of housemate Camilla. Cox, 20, said he was horrified after initial reports labeled the incident an alleged sexual assault. Halliwell was turkey slapped by him while she was restrained in bed by fellow housemate Michael John Brick. I felt sick when I heard the sexual assault accusation, said Cox. I would never hurt a woman. I didn't feel Camilla was assaulted at all. It was just a joke. It was just a joke with someone I've been living with 24 hours a day for 70 days. There was nothing sexual in it. The whole thing was totally blown out of proportion, unquote. Cox was removed from the compound with 21-year-old Brick by producers 12 hours after last week's incident. He said he did not feel he did anything wrong to his female housemate. Quote, if I have offended anyone, especially any women around Australia, I am very sorry, he said. If Camilla considers it to be wrong, then I will definitely apologize to her. Big Brother, ladies and gentlemen. Turkey slapping incident on Big Brother. And Dateline Canada. The country yet? Yes, it is. One of the teenagers who urinated on the National War Memorial on Canada Day, it's July 1st. Happy Canada Day, everybody. Showed up at the head office of the Royal Canadian Legion in Ottawa, the nation's capital, and tearfully apologized for his actions. The young man apologized to the Legion, the veterans of Canada, and the citizens of Canada, says Bob Butt of the Royal Canadian Legion's headquarters. The apology was definitely heartfelt. I know that it was real, and I know it was heartfelt, and I know the young person was definitely sorry. The actual act is inexcusable, he added, but that doesn't mean that if someone wants to come and make amends that we would turn that down. We're not ogres. We're not vigilantes. Another teen photographed doing the same thing has passed on an apology through the Ottawa police. Excuse me, Ottawa. The two young men won't face charges because they've agreed to make apologies and do community service. Another 23-year-old has been charged with mischief after he was photographed allegedly urinating on the National War Monument during Canada Day celebrations. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
Mama said there'll be days like this. There'll be days like this, Mama said. Mama said there'll be days like this. There'll be days like this, Mama said. One day I went walking and everything was fine. Then I met someone and I almost lost my mind. But Mama said there'll be days like this, there'll be days like this, Mama said. Mama said there'll be days like this, there'll be days like this, my mama said. My eyes were wide open, but all I could see, chapel bells were ringing for everyone but me. Mama said there'll be days like this, there'll be days like this, Mama said. Said there'll be days like this, there'll be days like this, my mama said. And then she said, one day you'll find someone who'll look at you this way, then you won't have to worry if some get away. Mom said there'll be days like this, there'll be days like this, Mama said. Mama said there'll be days like this, there'll be days like this, my mama said. There'll be days like this, Mama said.
Ladies and gentlemen, you remember President Bush's plan to put National Guardsmen on the Mexican border? Logistical and bureaucratic snags have delayed the deployment of the Guard troops. Arizona has little support so far from other states. Nearly 2 months after Bush's announcement, this is according to the Arizona Republic, only 898 Guard soldiers are actually working on the border. So far, the deployments have had, quote, no impact at all on arrests, mainly because of long delays in getting troops from outside the border states ready to deploy. Some states are, governors are reluctant to send their troops. So it's a plan, but I'd rather have the billions. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this week's edition of Le Show. The program returns next week from London, England, at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USN 440 system here in cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 short wave on the mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want at harryshearer.com and kcrw.com, available at channel 136 at Sirius Satellite Radio, and available as a free podcast at kcrw.com. And it would be just like having the billions if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. A tip of the Le Show chapeau to the San Diego and Pittsburgh desks. The show playlists available at harryshearer.com.
That was not Harry's fault.
Thank you. Thank you, Dick, very much for that ringing endorsement. The show comes to you from Century Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. See you next week from London.